I'm pleased to have Joe Galante here. He's really one of the leaders in the area of Reboa, and I think can provide us some good insights in when to use it and maybe when not to use it.
Thank you very much. I want to thank Dr. Constantini for inviting me to be a participant in this panel discussion. I have no disclosures. I do work on the COT Best Work Group, looking at the training for how to place Reboas. So as we've heard, this is middle of the night. Here's a patient who comes in. There's widening of the pubic symphysis, the binder's off. We are taught those hemodynamically unstable patients that we end up putting a binder on. As you can see, the binder goes on and there's still pubic symphysis widening. The idea and concept of placing binders on and off do not necessarily stop the hemorrhage that's causing your patient to become hemodynamically unstable. Also, you get patients that show up that are hemodynamically unstable, widened pubic symphysis, you get a binder placed, and someone's highly aggressive at placing that binder and ends up creating this picture in terms of now bones are overlapping. And that also is not doing what we're have binders designed to do, and it also is not doing anything to help stop that hemorrhage. We've heard Dr. Miller go through in detail on the classifications, which are very important, as Dr. Constantini ended up pointing out in his paper, that there's a higher risk of mortality and worse outcomes in patients with the AP compression and vertical shear. The issue is the patient that's hypotensive to 70, the concepts of figuring out which of these classifications at 2 o'clock in the morning are a little bit beyond me, so I try to go towards addressing the hemorrhage first, whether it be having the traditional sense of placing a binder or going through other means to try to temporize the hemorrhage. Patients with these fractures who are hypotensive are bleeding, and some are bleeding in the picture on the left and some are bleeding in terms of the picture on the right, but they're still bleeding. And given enough time, each of these will do this. They will eventually exsanguinate. They're enough water coming from those hoses to fill a swimming pool over time. The same thing is happening to the patient who's hypotensive with these pelvic fractures. So here we have a patient, comes in, pretty injured, does have other reasons potentially for being hypotensive, but does have a pelvic fracture. We place the traditional orange pelvic binder, and then we have two options, really. We either go to the operating room to do preperitoneal pelvic packing, or we go to interventional radiology to do embolization, and then eventually they get this nice fixation of their pelvis. The issue that we end up running into at many sites is the time period here between this dichotomous portion. This hypotensive patient, according to the ACS COT optimal resources guides, needs to get to the embolization within 30 minutes. As I mentioned, the 30-minute time frame to get to angio is a long time for a patient to be bleeding. While we have the orange binder on, other than the group from Memphis from 2007, a paper in JAX did show a decrease in transfusion requirement with pelvic binders, that has not been able to be duplicated in many other studies. So the pelvic binder really comes in as a stabilization tool for the pelvis, but does not necessarily reduce the ongoing hemorrhage that's occurring within the pelvis. You have to get them either to embolize or to preperitoneal pelvic packing in order to stop that hemorrhage. But it's in this time period where the Reboa becomes important. So Reboa is not new. Everybody likes to talk about new emerging. It's not new. It was written in 1952 by Colonel Hughes, who used the catheter to stop abdominal hemorrhage. We currently, at this point in time, have the ER Reboa catheter, which is a 7 French catheter. The alternative to the ER Reboa catheter is to use the Coda balloon, which is really a 12 French system that requires a long wire. That becomes quite cumbersome for anyone who's tried to do that in an emergency department in a dying patient. So the ER Reboa catheter is becoming the gold standard for the time being of what to use in terms of Reboa. Reboa is placed through the common femoral, not superficial femoral artery. It can be placed with relative ease, especially in a patient who already has an arterial line. And then the catheter is positioned in the aorta, the balloon's inflated, and it decreases blood flow and or cuts off blood flow distal to where the balloon is. It is essentially the equivalent of doing an ED thoracotomy and placing a cross clamp on the aorta. There's proposed techniques for REBOA. This was published by Rasmussen et al. In the Journal of Trauma, which goes through a sequence, an algorithm of how to place REBOA. So it is the hypotensive patient. This is not every patient that shows up with a pelvic fracture or every patient that shows up in the emergency department. Common femoral artery access is obtained. A chest x-ray is obtained because you don't want to drive up the central pressure by inflating the REBOA balloon in a patient who has an aortic injury. You perform a FAST. If the FAST is negative, and this is the area that we want to focus on, if the FAST is negative and you check a pelvis x-ray and there's a pelvic fracture, then a zone 3 REBOA is indicated at that point in time. If there is no pelvic fracture, the patient's still hypotensive, then you would place a zone 1 REBOA. Zone 1 REBOAs are up in the thoracic aorta, and zone 3 REBOA deployment is below the renal arteries, meaning you continue to allow perfusion to the abdominal organs but cut off the blood flow down to the pelvis. When a REBOA is in place in a zone 3 deployment, these are images of what it looks like. That's the balloon with contrast in it showing where the REBOA catheter sits. Ideally, it will allow for continued perfusion whatever you can get with a hypotensive patient, but at least it doesn't cause the ischemia to the kidneys and other abdominal organs. So it's relatively easy to place it. As I said, a femoral arterial line, you access the common femoral artery, you place a 7-friend sheath, you measure the ER REBOA catheter on the patient to figure out what the distance that you're going to insert it in is. You insert it through the sheath, insufflate the balloon, and you should see an increase in central pressure. And what you can't see is the decreased blood flow into the pelvis, which stops that hemorrhage. It's important to note that it's 7-French. When you go to embolization, and I'll talk about this later, it's typical that patients will get a 5 to 7 French sheath placed to do some of the embolizations. So by placing the 7-French sheath to deploy the REBOA to stop the hemorrhage is not doing something to the artery that the patient would not already have gotten going to IR. And we know that this works in other situations where patients are going to have endovascular techniques performed on them. This is a paper looking at 10-year experience with endovascular aneurysm repair from ruptured abdominal aneurysm. You can see a 30-day mortality was 13%, and they felt that it was improved by selectively using transfemoral superiliac aortic balloon occlusion, meaning in these patients that were bleeding while they were prepping to do the repair of the ruptured aneurysm endovascularly, they would place a catheter up, stop the hemorrhage, allow resuscitation to catch up, and then perform the endovascular repair. And this study was done with the 7-French or the 12-French Coda balloon, which carries, some would argue, more risk with that larger diameter sheath. Now, the big issue that comes up when we discuss REBOA are complications, but I want to take it from a different perspective. I want to talk first about the complications that we get from angioembolization, which we've heard from many speakers up here is a way to stop hemorrhage in a certain patient population. So this paper in JACS looking at acute complications listed the complications at 35% related to angioembolization. The paper at the bottom is the German experience published in Journal of Trauma in 2012, and they had a 0% complication rate with their angioembolization. So in the literature, like in most things when we look at complication rates, we have a huge range for pelvic embolization of complication rate of 35% and 0%. So really, what I usually tell my residents is you usually go with the number that's in the middle. So somewhere probably around 15% is probably what the complication rate is. That's all complications. Complications to the vessels, complications of failed intervention, complications of secondary injury. And remember, these are difficult patient populations to identify complications with because they are severely injured, hypotensive patients who have high mortality rates to begin with. We already saw it at 35% or higher with pelvic fractures. So, when we take a look at complication rates from REBOA, I've pulled out manuscripts here from 2015, 2016, and 2017, different groups of experiences looking at complication rates with REBOA. I've eliminated the mortality in both the angioembolization and the mortality rates with the REBOA catheters, but the Japanese experience, the AAST experience, and the combined Houston experience has shown complication rates with REBOA related to similar complications that you get with angioembolization to be around the 10 to 11% rate. So that's the complication of puncturing the artery, placing the balloon, and then dealing with the punctured artery. Now, the other issue comes is it's like cross-clamping the aorta. We are now creating ischemia reperfusion in already injured tissue. And that does create a concern in many of our minds because this is a, we're not often opening the chest and cross-clamping the aorta. So we do need to address the ischemia reperfusion that we're going to get and the second hit that potentially comes with deploying the REBOA. So there are reports and animal studies that we've done looking at partial resuscitation or partial REBOA in terms of placing the balloon, insufflating it for a short period of time, and then slightly deflating the balloon to allow some blood flow to go in order to slowly wash out the distal metabolites. We have done it and shown that with partial, we don't achieve the same systolic blood pressure gradient as with complete, but we certainly are not at what the control is in terms of the animals that we did the study on. So there is some pressure gradient, which then should translate into flow. We looked at the flow gradients by decreasing the balloon of the REBOA 1 cc at a time over a period of 6 minutes and saw that at the when we were at about 5 mLs of the balloon, we saw a dramatic increase in aortic blood flow, meaning that with the balloon, you can make small incremental adjustments in terms of cc volume of the balloon in order to get a little bit of flow, and a little bit of flow is enough flow to wash out those metabolites. So really, there is no really a single answer to the issue of REBOA. You have to assess the hypotensive patient when they come in. As Dr. Miller pointed out, not every patient who's hypotensive necessarily has a pelvic fracture that is conducive with putting on a binder or a ton of hemorrhage from that type of fracture. REBOA does offer a quick method in order to stop the hemorrhage. And it is that time period between when the patient arrives hypotensive and you start your resuscitation in order to get them to the next stage of care, either embolization or up to the operating room. It offers a time period to shrink down how much there is of hemorrhage. And one of the big pushbacks, as I mentioned, was the complication rates. But when you look at the complication rates of angioembolization to REBOA, those are around that 10 to 15% range, and if they're comparable, then we really need to address stopping that hemorrhage earlier. So REBOA, I believe, is a feasible option, zone 3 REBOA for pelvic fractures, but as I've sort of alluded to, we have data for REBOA, but we need more, or else we wouldn't be having a big conversation like this as in a pelvic fracture talk about this new idea of REBOA. If we get more data on use of REBOA in pelvic fractures, I think that the data itself will tell us which direction really should be pointing in with REBOA. So thank you.